Hello, this is Chris O'Regan, and you're listening to The Sausage Factory. This is episode 491 of The Sausage Factory. In this episode, I interview Luca Carbonera of Carbo Studio about the design and development of Zero Cybert, a survival adventure game. Both myself and Luca really struggle describing this game. I had a go, Luca had a go. Just, you know, he's been working on it for years. He can't either. It is a 2D action game. You're the focus of the camera. When you move, the whole world moves around with you. But what's unique about this game is that it is pixel art, 2D sort of low-resolution sort of experience. But what the high-resolution aspect of it is the atmosphere. The atmosphere of this game is incredible. It's all built around creating a sense of tension and generating a significant amount of anxiety on the part of the player. Extraordinary feat, and we do talk about this and how the design of Zero Cybert was anchored around that concept. Now, the music is by Kupfergrun, and there's a link to their SoundCloud page. But the game itself is in early access, and I believe it still is at the time of releasing this podcast. So if you want to get in and help with the development, and I strongly recommend you do, because it's an extraordinary game. So without further ado, let's listen to me talk to Luca about the creation of Zero Cybert. Chris, take it away. Hello, Luca.
Hello, Chris.
Could you tell us who you are and what you do?
I'm Luca Carbonera. I'm the formerly developer of Zero Cybert, which is an extraction shooter on top-down view, with heavily inspired by the Stalker series of game and with a lot of emphasis on the gunplay mechanics of the game, with also some basic features for survival and base building.
Indeed, and we'll be delving into that in the second half of the show, but before we do, we need to find out more about you, Luca. So, could you tell us, how did you make your start making video games?
I started making video games in high school. I'm 28 years old now, so we're talking about a lot of years ago. And I always develop some games as a hobby, so I never release a game. I was jumping from one project to another in month. This month I'm going to do this game, the next month I'm going to jump in another project. After high school, I was studying mechanical engineering. But I didn't finish it because meanwhile I was still doing some hobby project. And one of these hobby projects was Zero Cybert. And when I started developing it, as I said, it was just like a hobby. So I didn't put any budget on it, or I didn't really have any hope. How can I say it? But after I start posting videos on Reddit and YouTube, and people start like the project, so I was more focused on continuing to develop the game. after like 1 year of developing it and posting videos and images, I started putting out some free version of the game, basically some demos that everyone can could download and play. And people really liked it. So I was like, okay, maybe let's try something more serious. So like 1 week after, I start a Kickstarter campaign. But it was not going so well because I put like 8,000 euros as a goal of the Kickstarter campaign. But after 2 weeks, I was like not even the half amount. So I started to send emails to a lot of YouTubers that could play the game. So, but I sent like 50 emails. Only 4 of the YouTubers answered me. One of them was Splattercat Gaming and made a video about it. And basically the next day the campaign was found and it exceeded a lot. So in the end, I raised about $20,000 and was all thanks to Splattercat that made the video. So in that moment, I understand that you can have a good idea, a good prototype, but spreading the word and the marketing is the second half part of developing a game.
Yes, things are very, very different now than they used to be, and discoverability is almost as difficult as making the game itself.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's the times we live in. Okay, so you started off very young, and when you're a teenager, and you kept on plugging away at creating games, and even when at university. So okay, well, we're all better off for it. And could you tell us, what are your greatest influences as a creator?
Definitely everything that is, I mean, for Zero Saver, definitely everything that is post-apocalyptic, the setting. I really love the Stalker series of games, Metro games, Escape from Tarkov, everything that has that Eastern European setting, post-apocalyptic, I love that. So I think I thought about making something that I would play myself. So I make like a 2D version of Stalker. And after that, I found out that a lot of people would love to play something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that is an extraordinary thing, isn't it? To take something that is really about a visual first person, it was all about the lighting, wasn't it? The fact there was so little colour. And they lent into that because there wouldn't be any colour. It's just this wasteland. Whereas in Zero Saver, you've gone a completely different way. But to be drawn to be inspired by that sense of dread, which we're going to talk about in the second half of the show, is quite a thing to be inspired by. So look, that's something I actually found, you know, compelling. A much abused word in video game commentary, but it's true. Video games by the nature have to be compelling. But that's to be inspired by that, to be drawn to that very feeling, which I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what I get from, certainly when playing Zero Saver, is just like, oh yeah, there's just like, even though it's like, this is the likelihood of your survival is about 20%, you still do it anyway, yeah. Because you've got 20%, not zero, and that's the key. So next question then. What video game developer do you admire most and why?
Here I think I'm not the right person to ask because I don't tend to follow much the scene behind the indie game industries. I always, I'm the type of guy that just play the games. Mm-hmm. I really like finding some small indie games, but I'm not really into the industries around it. Also because I'm really new about it. This is my first real game, so I'm still new to all the industries, and I'm not before Zero Saver. I was not really again into knowing the developer of the game, what they've done before. So the only thing that I watched before was all the talk of the Vlambeer developer, so Nucleotron. They made a bunch of YouTube, but the video were on YouTube. I remember that I watched a lot of Vlambeer videos and also some GDC talk about game design, game development. But right now I cannot tell you one in particular because it was like more around the topic of the talk, more than the person who is talking.
That's fair. That's fair. And then there's, you know, you're drinking in the medium itself, but not necessarily those who are involved in its creation. Maybe that will come later as you start making yet more games, and then you find yourself having to interact with others more and who create, and then eventually you go, "That's a good dude, a good person. I like that. They do good things." So yeah, we come in time. I mean, it doesn't have to be a person. It can be a studio. It can be, you know, that's what I don't, it doesn't, you know, the question is basically saying creators or creator, fellow creators, I should say, who do you admire? Who do you point to and say they're doing some very good work? But no, if certainly if you've been very focused on creation zero Cyvert, so that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, as far as we can talk, I think about more than small developers, I don't know really much, but if we're going to talk about big studios, then obviously everyone has his own preference, but I think your question was more like on small studios.
No, it could be any creator of any kind. It could be everyone from right through from Nintendo down to Lucas Pope, right across the board. You know,
I really like them, the Larian Studios. So I love their dedication to their game because it's mind-blowing. Not with Baldur's Gate 3, but even before, for me, it's mind-blowing what they could have they've done with their games. Is very crazy, and then if I have to say someone, I would say them. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Yeah. It's that they done other work other than Baldur's Gate 3. Everyone, they've also done the Divinity games, which are people need to know about them because they are they are an important set of games, very much so. Right. Last question of the first half. Here we go. What are you playing right now? If anything.
Right now, I'm starting replaying Elden Ring because the DLC announcement was in the air for about 2 months. So it was like, maybe it's time to start again with a new playthrough. Also because it's a very long game. So I will finish the game right on the DLC release.
One of our founders of Kane & Rince, Jay, he spent 300 hours on Elden Ring. So, he new game plused it, you know. So, he dragged that one in.
I have 180 hours or 90. It was like on Steam. I don't remember exactly. But the first playthrough was 100 hours. It was, I don't think I'm gonna ever do it again.
No, and it's very difficult to describe to people who haven't played it. It's very difficult.
Yeah, also because I'm not the type of guy that can skip the content on the game.
No.
So I tried to restart it again, Elden Ring, like 6 months ago, but I was doing again every dungeon and everything because I'm not skipping this area. I'm gonna do it again. So after a while, it's become really not tedious, but it's a long journey to finish again 100% the thing.
And like Zero Cyvert, you can't be complacent. You can't be complacent. You know, even if you are quite high level, you can be waylaid like if you're not careful. So, there's a bit of crossover there. I can see why.
Okay. I think all the roguelite genre take some inspiration from the difficult of the Dark Souls series.
They do.
I think that more than other way around, because obviously Dark Souls comes after their roguelike.
Indeed, yes. Just a bit, 30 years. Anyway, let's move on to the second half of the show, where we're going to be delving deep into Zero Cyvert.
Bye.
So, before we do explore the ravages that is the realm that finds itself in Zero Sovert, what is it? We've been dancing around it. You had a good go at explaining it at the beginning of the show, but if you could get a bit more detail, what is Zero Sovert?
I would say that from Zero Sievert, you can expect a challenging experience on a top-down extraction shooters. If you like roguelite games with some challenging and a lot of exploring, this is the, I think this is the game for you, because it's going to always keep you in tension. You always have to be careful what to do, because your next step can be the last one. And even, as you said before, even experienced players still have to be careful about it. So it's a extraction shooter with survival mechanics and some base building. I'm not really good at explaining what my game is, because it's like this one. Can I say something more? It's like a pixel version of Escape from Tarkov. Is the way that people often explain the game, the players, because
For the benefit of listeners who may be not familiar with those other titles, it is presented in a way that is, like I say, a 2D top-down view. It is not isometric. It's purely sort of plan view. The screen moves, the scrolls around the center of the player. So the player's in the middle, and everything moves around them, more or less. And you have weapons, you have, initially you have kit, you have food, you have water, you have bandages, all those kind of things. You have ammunition, very important. Ammunition is a resource in Zero Sovert. And you have, while the player has a full plan view of what's going on in terms of the environment, the character itself only sees what's immediately in front of them, which means that things could be heard before they're seen. It's quite ingenious. So this is a facet of it's a bit like playing Diablo with, when you can only see what's in front of you, which would be nigh on impossible to play Diablo if you did that, because you'll die. Yeah, although, granted, it is a click fest, but that's really the setup of the game. And you go out with this equipment and the vain hope of going out foraging for things, which you then bring back to a base. And then you sell things, you build things in that base, and then you keep doing that, preferably over and over again, to the point where you become more and more proficient. And you get stronger, and you get more better equipment, you get more experience, you become a veteran of going out into the wilds, and then you earn ranks and all sorts of things. You become accepted by the military, and you say you're actually a useful person rather than some straggler that's wandered in from the outside. Actually become a useful member of this commune community, this enclave surrounded by this wasteland. And it's an extraordinary thing. You just, like, this more you pour into Zero Sovert, the more you come back out to you. Yes, that's said many times about games like this, but Zero Sovert really, really exploits that, saying you will start very, very, very weak, and you'll only, if you have to figure out for yourself how to get through it. And that's the reward in of itself, just that sense of, I get this now, I know where I can go, where I can push. And it's quite, but it is, you have to temper your expectations. My best piece of advice to a new player playing it, they will get brutally murdered very quickly. Just, you know, take baby steps, maybe take out one or two straggling soldiers or raiders that shouldn't be there, run in, grab their stuff, then run off again, because you won't survive. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, I couldn't say it better.
Thank you. As you can see, I've spent some time with it, you know. Yeah. But I'm delicately not revealing too much, because the thing about the Sausage Factory is we talk about the how, not the what. If you want to know the what, go and listen to Kane and Rince, which I know many of you do, so that's fine. So my first design question to you is, the one thing that strikes me about Zero Sovert is its focus on the mere act of moving. Just moving, everyone. In most games, what's the problem? Whereas everything is anchored around moving, not only the direction you go, but where you're heading and what's around you when you're doing that. And it's a sense of trepidation that's infused into the player from the very early on. But I'd like to ask you, Luca, how on earth did you maintain this sense of atmosphere, this sense of dread, even after players may have done this 100 times? I speak for myself on this. They still get, the biggest enemy is the mere act of movement. Tell us, what have you done in the design of Zero Cyber to encourage this sense of apprehension?
Yeah, right from the beginning, I know that I have to put a lot of attention into the tactical feeling of the game. So as you just said, even slow walking have to be something that the player has thought about it, where to walk, when to walk. In a 2D game, is very different because I cannot really take my experience on the 3D game, tactical 3D game, and directly export it into a 2D version of it, because obviously the perspective is different. But what I tried and was really successful for the game was just basically the player can see in a cone in front of him, and he cannot see anything, so he cannot see enemies that are around, that are behind solid objects. At this, even with a 2D top-down perspective, it adds a lot of tension to the game because you don't know where the enemies are, but you can hear them if you are kind of close to them. That's, I think, the most important and kind of only the only thing that adds a lot of tension to the game, and in fact works really well in Zero Cyber.
Yeah, it exactly. It's just the limited view angle. That's it. It's a simple thing. Just drop that in, you know. But it doesn't make a lot of sense to listeners to feel that, wait, you're walking around a big map, you're in the middle of the map, therefore you must be able to see everything. Only the environment. Only see the environment. You cannot see any creatures behind you. Similarly, if it's at night, you can only see immediately around you, a small bubble outside your light emitting or any torch that you're using. Beyond that, completely black, because it would be. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing is that I deliberately not making all the screen black, all the part that the players cannot see black, because you will move around the mouse a lot while playing. So the being completely black to color in a split second is going to be a lot of trouble. Not trouble, but it's going to be bad for the player to look at it. So the only thing that you cannot see are the enemies, and the area that you cannot see is kind of blackout a little bit, but is this nice soft black that is not causing any issue to the players that are playing. Yeah.
Next question, then. I want to talk about the weapons. You have ranged weapons, and these ranged weapons can be everything from a pistol right through to all sorts of things. I'm not going to reveal what, but you can pack quite a punch when you pick up certain things. Now, the weapons range and your ability to shoot, you have stats applied to the player, and the more they do things, the better they get at doing these certain things in a Bethesda-like way, if you like. And that's great, and it's wonderful. But what I loved is how did you overcome the problem of a sniper scope? How do you deal with that in a 2D plane? What do you do? Well, it's ingenious. Basically, a bubble appears, or a big circle appears, and it zooms in on it basically creates a zoomed in portion of the map where you're trying to shoot. That and other means of firing and shooting, and the fact that when you're shooting a person and the border around them changes from white to red and all sorts, it's really trying to inform the player as much as they can about what they are doing and how it's interacting with the world. Can you talk us through the design of the ballistics and the weapons, and how you've had to slowly, gradually optimize this? Because at the time of recording, Zero Cyber is in early access, so there's been changes, and it's significant early access. It's not a beta kind of thing. It's a feature content complete. It isn't at the time of recording. It's still things to be poured into it, and Luca's doing a fantastic job of updating it constantly. But it's just a sense of, just want to talk, because I've witnessed it. I saw how it evolved over time. But talk us through how the weapons design, because it's very, very important to Zero Cyber.
Yeah, as you just said, it's very important for Zero Cyber because the gunplay is the basic of the game. It's something that you found yourself doing all the times, basically, in the game. So it has to be something that is going to be challenging and rewarding for the players. So Well, I can start that we just reworked the gunplay system of the game like 2 months ago, thanks with the help with experienced design, which is Lee Kemp that joined us in the development team. Basically, him and me find out that the gunplay was kind of always the same because every players that play the game for more than 20 hours was running around with a sniper rifle and an assault rifle. It was basically just cheesing the eye at the edge of the screen with a sniper rifle, and that's it. So every encounter with the enemies can be cheesed that way, and the people do that, because if they can do that, they will, because it's a simple way to take out enemies. So we find out, we thought about a solution, and the solution was to add the effective range to each weapon categories. So pistol, SMGs, assault rifle, DMRs, and the sniper rifle. You can think about that each weapon categories has its own effective range in a certain distance from the players. So this means that sniper rifle are very good at long range, but they are not good anymore at close range. While pistol SMGs are very good at close range, but after a while, after a certain distance, they basically do no damage. And the assault rifle and DMR are kind of in between these two. This was a kind of controversial change for the community, because the fact that some weapons don't do damage at long range, like pistol SMGs, they thought, come on, this enemy is like at the edge of the screen, so it's going to be still really close if you think like in real life, but you're not doing any damage at all. And the fact that sniper rifle does like 50% of the damage when you are really close to an enemy, I agree that this does not make sense in real life, but this is not real life, this is a video game. And this change actually was received very well for a lot of experienced players, because it's basically, you're going to play a kind of new game, because now we have to think really well where we are going into the map. Okay, I'm going to the industrial map, which has a lot of indoors factories, so you have to bring maybe SMGs or pistols, because it's going to be a lot of cross-quarter combat. Or if you go to the forest, maybe it's a more open map, I can bring a sniper rifle with a secondary weapon. These changes of the gameplay, again, received really, really well for a large part of the community. And we really think that was a very good change. I personally love the new gameplay. In fact, when we were testing these new changes, I went back and played the old version of the game. I was like, nah, I don't like this game anymore.
Just as little tweaks. It's not a little tweak, but that's just, it's on a grand scale of things, it is small, but it's the matter. Profound change to the experience. And you're right, exactly. You have to, real life is lovely, but this is a video game. You know, when you suddenly, there's a borderline when you can actually go into so far realms into uncanny valley, as it is, you know, it's like, okay, well, there's a conceit here. There has to be, you know, due to the limitations, and it's not a criticism, it's a observation, the limitations of the environment and how Zero Cyber is presented to the player. How else are we going to do this? Yes, it does make any sense that because someone's a meter away, you can't shoot them with a sniper rifle. It's a kind of a weird thing to do because they're a bit unwieldy and they're very loud and heavy. Trust me, I know, because I've fired one. So it does make more sense because they got a massive kickback anyway. So, you know, you can add all that kind of like thing into it. That's a thought. But okay. Well, fantastic response. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, another thing that is interesting for maybe some developers is that Zero Sievers was designed to be played like tactical, so more slowly. But with these gameplay changes, we found out that a lot of the community was playing this game like a run and gun. They were running around the map and shoot everything that moves. So with the old system, they can do that really easily. With the new system, they cannot do that anymore. So this was kind of funny, because we never think about that a lot of players was playing the game this way and not the way we meant it to be played. So this is also another funny interaction. Yeah,
that's great. I like the slow pace. It's more my speed. I'm not a young person anymore. My hand-to-eye coordination isn't what it used to be. So it's perfect speed for me. Thanks. Now, I want to talk about progression in Zero Cyber, my next question. It's quite gradual. It's quite slow and gradual, but multi-layered. There's lots of things you can progress in, not just in stats, but other things like money and resources and equipment. And it's just, there's so many things you can actually grow and pour effort into and spend time improving. Was this deliberate? Was this always the intention to have this multi-strand sense of progression, or was it something that's evolved out of developing Zero Cyber?
It was totally from the beginning of the development of the game, because I had in mind this type of game so that the players can slowly progress through the game the first time they play the game. Because the first time they play the game, everything is new for the players. You have to adapt to the mechanic, which are not so immediate. And there are a lot of hidden mechanics and kind of complex maybe to the game. Like the gun system is kind of complex. You know, don't really see that really much. And the progression for the first time players has to be done correctly. This means that they have to feel satisfied when they acquire a new gun or when they survive the first time. If you're not used to the extraction shoot genre, but you play Zero Sievert, which a lot of people did that because they told us that it was the first time they approached extraction shooter genre with Zero Sievert, the first few times you extract a life from the map feel really good. And that's something that I had playing Escape from Tarkov, which is basically an extraction shooter. So again, playing the first time, you have to complete mission, acquire loot, and it's all slow because you don't really know what you are expecting from the maps, from the gunplay, from the enemies. So again, each loot you can take home with you is gonna be, it's gonna feel like a win, but it's not really about that. Obviously, after a lot of hours, you really feel the game, start feeling the game. You know that if you want this type of loot, you go into this map. If you want to fight this type of enemy, you go to this map in this particular zone of the map. So again, here I think that is really very good because again, the first time you play the game, you feel this slow progression and you feel really satisfied with playing the game, acquiring new equipment. The second and third time you play the game, you still feel satisfied because if you want to acquire a weapon, maybe a very good weapon early on or advance really quickly, building the base, you already know where to go. And this feels good. This still feels good because you are using your game experience to getting faster progressions. And for me, this feels good in other games and for a lot of players too.
Yeah. If the best way I can summarize it is, while effort is spent, it's very rewarding once you do reach that plateau, reach that point. I'm going to go for this. I'm going to try and build this or create this. I can create an amazing gun that will make me feel just a little bit less vulnerable, please. But as you say, ultimately is an extraction shooter. So if you weren't feeling vulnerable, it's not much of a that it wouldn't work very well, which we've already covered in any part of the show. So let's move on. The last design question anyway. We're going to sign off with something else. Bit of a surprise, everyone. But the sound design. The sound design is really impressive in Zero Cyber. Really, really impressive. It does tell very informative because you find yourself listening more, using your ears more than you do with any other sense when you're playing Zero Cyber, because they are way more reliable than what your eyes see. Can you talk us through the design of it? What have you done to the sounds? Because they are artificially altered. I get the sense that you've cranked up some of the treble or some of the distorted the sounds to make them more clear, to raise them above other background sounds. So you could just talk us through how you work through that.
Yeah, one of the key points of Zero Sievert should be the atmosphere that you feel while playing the game. And a good atmosphere means a good audio system, a good sound that can tell something to the player. Again, this is should be played like a tactical shooter, tactical game. So the audio is really important because you cannot see, again, every part of the screen you are looking at. So, for example, enemies can be mutant, can be NPC player, NPC enemies, makes kind of a lot of sounds when they when they work. So if you slowly approach to a building, you enter this building and you go, you see a room, but you won't go into this room. You maybe you can listen if there is an enemy there, if they are walking or they're not walking or slowly walking. So you can now expect what is that room, because it's different type of enemy makes a different type of sound on footstep. So after a while you play the game, you can now understand what this is, that what is in that room. You can anticipate what you're gonna to fight. This is the footsteps down is the one point. The second point is more the atmosphere of the guns and especially the bullets, because when the bullet travels by nearby the players, there is the sound played like pew.
Yeah.
And this this adds a lot of to the atmosphere of the game, because you feel kinda that you are there. Obviously, you are there in that situation, and this helps a lot in a 2D game. I mean, even more in a 3D games. But this was one of the things that I brought from a 3D game that is really well play really well in a 2D game as well. The third key point is the sounds that bullets make when they impact with different materials. So each prop of the game is set as a different material, as a variable, as a state. And for each different material, I have a different sound that makes on impact. And this, again, adds a lot of atmosphere, because when you are in a gunfire, you don't pay attention to the sound that are around you, but you feel it. It's not strange, because everyone knew that you feel the sound. You don't listen to the sound. This is the different.
Yes.
And all these three key points, I think, that are very simple on paper, or even make them very simple, because the most difficult part was finding the good audio for the game, the good sound effect. But once you have the sound effect, it's very easy to implement them into the game, because I think that every game developer has played a lot of games in their lives. So it's all about when you are playing a game, think about what the developer have done for that game. And this is something that I understand while I was growing up and developing more games, more hobby games. I started to pay a lot of more attention to the details of other games and what other developers have done to their games. And this helped me a lot, that making some of these small changes that increase a lot of the atmosphere of the game and the overall experience.
Yeah, that's a fantastic job of doing all of those things. And it's really wonderful to say, well, look, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this right. And sound has to take, front and center, because the visuals are limited. It's true.
Exactly.
They're wonderful, but they are deliberately limited. They can only tell you so much. So that's really not particularly fair on the player. So what other sense do we have? Oh, I know. Sound. And indeed, we featured some games on the Sausage Factory which don't have any visuals at all. They are simply just sound games. And they are out there, everyone. There's some wonderful games out there. They're just sound. You just navigate your way around the world. Sound only. So, Zero Sivert, it's been developed by Carbo Studio. Is that right?
Yep.
And published by Modern Wolf. And what platforms is it available on?
It's available on PC, Windows for now.
Right. Excellent. And just to ask you, what plans do you have in terms of content? Because it's an early access game, and I know things are being poured in as we go through. So, yeah, what have we got coming up, do you think, is going to pique players' interest?
At least there are coming another two maps for the game, because there are the least amount of maps needed for a complete story of it, as I expected. We are going to add a new skill system to the game to rework this old one that is kind of old and not so practical. I don't really like it much.
Okay. I was just thinking the controller support, I believe that was mentioned.
Oh, yeah. The controller support, which is something that the players really want, because, again, I didn't expect this, but a lot of players play this game on Steam Deck, which is something that I was curious about it because I was like, how can you play this game on a Steam Deck?
There are ways and means to do it.
Here again, I have to say thanks to the designer that joined us because he's made a wonderful job to adapt gameplay of Zero Sievert with a gamepad support, which is made a good job. And now the game feels good to play even on console. Gamepad.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show, Luca. You've been really open and honest about the creation of Zero Sievert and its continued development, of course, at least at the time of recording. And we wish you the very best of luck with it. But thank you.
Thank you, too.
I told you it took ages to figure out how to describe the game. I still don't think you did a very good job of it, but I think you got the gist of what Zero Sievert's about. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording that episode. Thank you, Luca, for being such a wonderful guest. Next week, we have episode 492, and it features Undercover, a VR title that harks back to light gun games of the late 1990s. You can figure out what they may be. Might have the word crisis in it. Now, I talked to Luke Thompson of Sig Trap Games about how Undercover was created. Now, that's going to be a really long episode because Luke really does like getting into the woods and going to the real complex development and physics of the creation of these games. He's been on before. Sig Trap Games has been on before many, many moons ago. And this is a return visit. Do love having return guests on. It's wonderful. So do check that out. But like I said, it's a long one, but really worth it. Until then, bye.
You have been listening to the Sausage Factory podcast, part of the Cane and Rinse Collective. Support us for just $2 per month at patreon.com/CaneandRinse for early, extended and exclusive podcasts. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube and at our website, caneandrinse.com.